Welcome to episode 29 of Your Kids Next Read podcast, in which we talk about books and reading for kids of all ages. I'm Alison Tate, author of middle grade adventure series The Mapmaker Chronicles, The Adaban Cipher, and my latest, The Maven and Reeve Mystery Series, and I'm here with my co-host, the effervescent Megan Daly, celebrity teacher librarian, blogger at Children's Books Daily, and author of Raising Readers, How to Nurture a Child's Love of Books. Megan and I, along with our good friend, author Alison Rushby, are founders of the Your Kids Next Read community on Facebook. Search for Your Kids Next Read there to join us. So, Megan Daly, it's always such a pleasure to chat to you. What have you been up to?
Well, I'm feeling really great today, but yesterday was one of the worst days I have had so far in the adventures of parenting four children and a dog with anxiety.
Gosh.
And if you're based in Brisbane, you may like know which day I'm talking about. We had a massive storm in Brisbane yesterday, but my day didn't start with the storm. My day started with my dear mother had made me, trying to be helpful, had been making me some lunches, and she'd made this delicious pumpkin, kaffir lime, and like satay peanut soup for me. It was so delicious. Had it in the car and on the way to school, and you can probably imagine what happened. The lid came off. I have pumpkin soup all through the boot of the car, over everything. It went all through my handbag. It just went over everything to the point that I thought, I'm actually going to cry on the major road that St. Peter's is on. I'm just going to cry in front of the small bees, in front of everybody. It was horrific.
Hold on. I have to interject here. You put pumpkin soup in the boot?
I have four children, okay? I am putting things everywhere.
Okay. Just checking.
I know it should have gone on the front seat in some sort of a lunch bag. But
in
when
someone's
you have
lap.
Four children. And actually, just to actually add to that, I forgot this bit until now when you said that. The beekeeper rang me a bit later and said, "Hey, I can't find my lunch." And I found out sometime later that I'd stuck that in the smallest bee's school bag. So, in fact, the beekeeper's lunch also went to St. Peter's yesterday. But then, so that was one thing, and I couldn't deal with it. I had to get the boys to school. And then the preppy, the smallest bee, had a massive meltdown over shoes, like to the point that he was just crying hysterically about the wrong shoes, rah, 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 as five-year-olds do. Got them off to school, taught some library lessons. They were really intense library lessons. Then I got a phone call saying that a very nice man was walking his dog and he found my dog in the Brisbane River in the mud, attempting to swim to the other side of the Brisbane River because there was a storm. And he was like, "I think he's trying to swim away from the storm, which won't happen." So my dog is out covered in mud. And then I got a phone call from St. Aidan saying that Ava, the oldest daughter, had a really massive reaction to her immune therapy that morning and her arm was all blown up. And could I come and pick her up? And then there was a storm warning and rugby was cancelled and it was just horrific. And the end of the evening was me washing the dog. I had to put him in the shower and I washed probably two buckets of Brisbane River silt down my drain. It was like he had mud 10 centimetres thick all over his body. I wanted
Megan.
To cry, but I was even past crying. I just was like, this is my life.
This is definitely a contender for a junior fiction novel called The Worst Day Ever.
I know.
That's impressive.
I thought you'd say that, but I was like, there's no good ending. Like, people have said to me, you need to write a story about your dog, but I'm like, there's no good ending. The ending would be, and then one day he chewed his way through the laundry door, got out of the house, ran over a major road and got hit. The end. Like, there's no good ending.
Yeah, no, you can't write that.
Story.
Let's not write that as a children's novel. That would not go well, I don't
think.
It
wouldn't.
No.
Tell me something good. What's happening in your world?
Oh, wow. Well, I've got nothing as kind of, you know, staggering, shall we say, as all that. We have been, what are we doing? Well, family-wise, we are all doing the HSC together because that's pretty much how it works. So Book Boy
has... How's that going?
Well, he's, you know, who knows? He's completed three exams, so yay. We're like not quite, but almost halfway there. And I say, "How was the exam?" And he says, "Fine." And I say, "Good." And that's that. That's the whole conversation about it.
I feel like boys are so much more I don't know, like just practical about it. You know, there'd be a lot of slamming doors with my girls, I imagine.
No, there's not a lot of slamming doors. I mean, it was funny because he's got a gig coming up, and someone said to me, "Oh, he's doing a gig in the middle of his HSC." And I'm like, "Oh, he's got gigs every weekend. Like this weekend, he's got a gig on Saturday, a gig on Sunday, and a maths test on Monday." And everyone's like, "Well, is that good parenting?" I'm like, "It's the only way." Because honestly, it's stressful enough. We don't need to add more stress to it. We're just doing what we have to do. And he's just getting through it. It's just, this year and the HSC and this group of kids doing their, and in, I guess in Brisbane it's your leavers or whatever it is you do. And it's just I just don't think that anyone can add more stress to what has been the most stressful couple of years for them. So we're just going with it. He has a pretty clear idea about what he wants to do next year. It doesn't involve university at this stage. He's deferred an early entry place. And so everyone's like, yeah, whatever. Let's just go forward. Let's
Let's
just
go
get it
forward.
done. That's what we're all at the let's get it done end of town, basically. The other thing I've been doing is sending out special signed copies of all my novels, which is quite exciting. So I've got a special offer on at the moment, which ends on the 30th of no November, where you can order signed copies for Christmas. I'll put the link for that in the show notes. And as a hot tip, there's a new post on my website at alisontate.com with a bit of a roundup of Aussie authors who are offering signed copies. So if you're looking for something a bit special for Christmas and you want a personalised signed copy for your kid, have a look at that post, and it is at alisontate.com. And again, I'll put the link in the show notes, and you'll find the show notes at yourkidsnextread.com. A very handy roundup of everything that we talk about, except for the pumpkin soup exploding in the car. But any books we mention, or so just so that you're not sitting there trying to like write down everything that's kind of going on, you'll find them at yourkidsnextread.com. The other thing I've been doing is I'm supposed to be doing NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month, where you write 50,000 words in 30 days. And instead, instead I've become consumed with a picture book idea. And obviously, a picture book is never going to be 50,000 words. So I've managed to write about 2,000 words, which is way too many for a picture book. But I'm finding that the whole thing, the concept of it and trying to figure out how to make it work, is just consuming my every waking thought. But I'm not actually making a huge amount of progress.
Yeah, but it's probably got to mull on, kind of just sit in your brain for a while, don't you think? So
I think
picture
so.
books are so difficult. As you know, I've just finished doing a picture book manuscript, and it's about 1500 words, also too long. And the thing is, people say, oh, that must be so easy to write a picture book because it's less words. And it's just not, is it? That's such a myth.
It is because I think the issue I'm having with it at the moment is just trying to work out how to fit in what I want to, what I want to do into the, because it's a very specific, product. It's a very specific word length. It's a very specific page count. It's a very specific, you've got to have, your end papers, and then you've got this. So you've actually, out of 32 pages, you've actually really not got that many. And it's,
No.
yeah, so just trying to figure out how to make all that work. But yeah, look, I'm really enjoying the process of it, although it is
And
making my
something a
head
bit
hurt.
different for you.
It is
Yeah.
something a bit different for me. I completed, as you know, we talked about this a few weeks ago, I just completed an edit on a new middle grade novel that I've been working on for a couple of years. And I think I just needed to do, I couldn't just dive into another 65,000 word, complicated middle grade adventure vibe. So I needed to just try and do something different. And this idea is something I've been, incubating for years, I reckon. Now that I think about it, it's been sort of in my mind for years. So whether or not it happens, I don't know. I mean, that's the thing with it. We could talk about it till the cows come home, and it may never happen. But maybe if we talk about it enough, the universe will look kindly upon me and just make it happen. All right. Speaking of universe looking kindly, let's look at the ones that have actually come to fruition, and let's talk about our book mail this week. So what book mail have you got for us, Megan?
Oh, I've got some really great book mail that I'm super happy with. The first one is Somebody's Land by Adam Goods and Ellie Lang, and it's illustrated by David Hardy. It's an Allen and Unwin publication, and it's going to be the first book in a new series called Welcome to Our Country, which is going to be a 5-book series designed to connect young people, parents and educators with First Nations history and culture. It is just such a well-designed book. I really like it from, you know, it's just a really quite beautiful production. The illustrations are fantastic. It's got a kookaburra on the D of land. I love a kookaburra. So I just love everything about the front cover and the design of it. But Somebody's Land begins the series by introducing readers to the term terra nullius, a Latin term meaning nobody's land, applied to the colonization of Australia by white settlers. And this book invites children and their families to imagine themselves into Australia's past, to feel the richness of our First Nations history, and to acknowledge that our country was never terra nullius. It's really fantastic. And Adam Goods is, I think, humour and positivity is just infused throughout it. So they've done a great job. I'm really excited about this series. Great one for school libraries, but also for home libraries. And I would say you could easily read this from 5 right up until, I don't know, 10, 11, 12. It's a great book. Next up is one for the really little people. It's Bluey Sleepy Time by Joe Brum, the creator of Bluey and writer. I have loved the Bluey series, and I would never have found out about Bluey were it not for the small bees coming into my life. I would have totally missed Bluey and the beauty of its writing. I haven't loved all of the Bluey books, I'll be honest, but I've loved some of them. This one is my new absolute favourite, and it's being gifted to quite a few 2 to 5-year-olds in my life for Christmas. So Bluey Sleepy Time is a really large format picture book, beautiful hardcover, and it's the story of Bingo. And most of you that know Bluey will know the Sleepy Time episode. It's one of the most popular. It made me a bit weepy, and the beekeeper said he did rather cry through the first time he watched Sleepy Time. It's well worth watching if you've not watched the Sleepy Time episode before. And the book is basically the episode, and it's about Bingo trying to be a really big girl and stay in her own bed all night, which of course does not happen. But yeah. It's just beautiful.
Of course it doesn't.
Of course it doesn't. And it's got some really large fold-out pages. It's just a beautiful, giftable book. I'm really loving that one. And then my final one is Just Pretend by Tori Sharp, which is a graphic novel for readers from about 11 plus. It's about a young girl who uses her very active imagination to navigate middle school as well as the fallout from her parents' divorce. The blurb says, Tori has never lived in just one world. Since her parents' divorce, she's lived in both her mum's house and her dad's new apartment. And in both places, no matter how hard she tries, her family still treats her like a little kid. Then there's school, where friendships old and new are starting to feel more and more out of her hands. Thankfully, she has books and writing. So you can see why I love it. It's about books and writing, and how this young girl, Tori, is navigating the complexity of her fractured family and, you know, but using books and writing as some of her sort of self-therapy. So I really like it. Great new graphic novel for readers that are enjoying things like the Raina Telger Meyer series. So that's my 3 bits of book mail for this week.
Oh, so it's a graphic novel, is it? Because I was reading the blurb and trying to figure out how it would have worked as a text. But that makes a lot more sense if it's a graphic, so you can see what she's doing, which is brilliant.
Love it.
All right. Well, I've actually got 3 picture books this week, which is, you know, quite good, really, given I'm trying to work my way through how to write one. One of the best things you can do, by the way, if you are someone who wants to write a picture book, is to read a lot of picture books. Like, it's fascinating to me. The number of people who want to write a certain thing, and I say to them, how long has it been since you read X certain thing? This often happens with middle grade because, you know, people wanting to write middle grade, but they haven't read a middle grade novel since they were 10. And, you know, middle grade novels have changed a lot since, you know, adults were 10. And it's, I mean, you always want to draw, you're always going to draw on those books that form your, you know, relationship with reading, you will always draw on those. Even subconsciously, they are going to come out. But I think that's where my love of groups of kids comes from, is all those books I read when I was young. But I, you know, they're not the same anymore. The
No,
way
they're
that
not.
things happen, and the amount of action in a narrative, generally speaking, is a lot more. You know, I think that the visual world and the internet and movies and Netflix and everything have really upped the stakes when it comes to the sort of like the screenwriting aspect almost
Absolutely.
of books. Anyway, that's a whole other aside. The books that I have got this week, the first one I've got is called Goodnight Toes by Justine Adams, illustrated by Camille Manley. And the thing I like about this, and I can see this working nicely if you have a kid, a young kid, that's, I don't know, I'm thinking maybe like it's a, you know, you could start reading from sort of two or three. But if you have a kid who struggles to relax at the end of the day and relax into sleep, it's almost like it takes you through like an almost like a little guided meditation
It's a guided
of your body.
meditation.
Yeah. So you kind of like it starts out with the kid, you know, warm, safe, loved, home, tucked up in bed. And then we say good night toes, thanks for all the wiggling, and you got to think about your toes. Then we say good night feet, thanks for the stomp, stomp, stomping throughout the day. So we work our way up the body, in that sort of, and you know, I can see, you know, reading this to a child in a soothing kind of a voice would work quite nicely for helping to sort of, you know, ease them into the idea that they're going to sleep. Like, let's get there as quickly as possible, hopefully. So that's called Goodnight Toes, Justine Adams, illustrated by Camille Manley. Now, the second one I've got is a gorgeously illustrated, like just beautiful. Hello, Kate James. You're doing lovely work. It's called Babies at the Billabong, and it's written by Maura Finn, and it's illustrated by Kate James. And it's a lovely looking book. Like, the illustrations are just gorgeous. And it sort of takes us through all the little babies around a billabong as the sun sets. And we go through each sort of, it's like a little girl, and she's observing the, or a little person, actually. I'm not going to say it's a girl. A little person observing the billabong, and they've gone for a little stroll, and they can see like the joeys sliding into the water. They can see the golden wattle. Then they're seeing the echidna puggles drumming. Like, puggle, what a great word. I love
Such a
that.
Great word.
A puggle is a baby echidna, if anyone's wondering. And it sort of, it builds on itself as it goes along. And it's just a beautiful, beautiful little book about, you know, life around the billabong, and it's all babies. And you learn, you know, you learn about the froglets, and you learn about the hatchlings, and you learn about the fact that flying fox babies are called pups. So I think it's a lovely narrative that sort of brings in, you know, fact in a really, really sort of lyrical and lovely way. But for me, the highlight here is definitely Illos. I really, really liked them. And then the third one that I have, and we're on a bit of a nature roll here, which is excellent, you know, considering the theme of our episode. This one is called Jumping Joeys by Sarah Allen. And again, this is a gorgeous, I love the end papers on this. And I know Megan
Beautiful.
Has a real thing for end papers. But this this one is called Jumping Joeys. It's by Sarah Allen. And it's all about the marsupials of Australia. And the dedication, which I also particularly liked, is to all young nature explorers. May you have many animal encounters in the wild. So it's a beautifully illustrated guide to Australian marsupials, but it's kind of like it's quite nice in the sense that it's not overly texty. So there's an image, for example, of a red kangaroo. The text on it says big feet bounce in the twilight. You get the name of what the animal is, red kangaroo, and then you get its actual, you know, scientific name as well, Os franta rufus. Did you know that?
I did not.
And then we have the koala joeys appearing from out of sight, and we have them sitting in a tree. We see the image of them, we have their common name, and then we have their scientific name, which I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce. But it's a lovely, you know, sort of introduction to Australian marsupials. The way that they move, that's the thing I also liked about it. Wombats trundle off to graze because they do, don't they? They
They
kind
do
of
trundle.
trundle. And then, you know, wallabies leap under stars. And so there's a lot of sort of action in the words, but there's not a lot of text, and there's just the image, and then you find out what the actual marsupial is. It's a lovely, lovely book. And all three of those actually come from Affirm Press. So thank you very much, Affirm, for sharing those with me.
Yeah, I really love that new one by Sarah Allen. And it's funny you mentioned that one because I just wrapped up her first book, Busy Beaks, which was a CBCA shortlisted book last year to give to a five-year-old for a birthday party tomorrow. And I've gifted it with some felted Australian birds, finger puppets.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's funny you mentioned
See,
that.
that's
Yeah,
you.
fun.
We talked about this, didn't we, in an earlier episode of the book and then the special little edition
Yes.
that goes with the book.
Yes,
That's a
yes,
great
yes.
idea. It's lovely.
Yeah.
All right, well, that was our book mail for this week.
Is your child reading ready? Whether you're preparing for your child's first year at school or even heading into grade one or two, chances are you're wondering about school readers. But has anyone taken you through how school readers work, why they exist, why teachers hand them over with reverence? In her Reading Ready webinar, author and educator Megan Daly will teach you how to support your child's reading journey and help them develop effective reading habits. You'll find the Reading Ready webinar at childrensbooksdaily.com/shop. That's childrensbooksdaily.com/shop.
All right, it's time for our bingo question of the week. And if you don't know what our bingo question is, these are the questions that get asked over and over again in the Your Kids Next Read Facebook group. And they are the kind of questions that if you had a bingo card, you could pretty much tick them off on a weekly or monthly basis, depending on some of them are more popular than others. But we are going to move on to that one. So, Megan, it's actually your bingo question this week. So you tell me, what are we talking about?
We are looking at outdoor adventuring today and books which support that. I really love this bingo question. I saw it come up in the Your Kids Next Read Facebook group and I jumped on it and started writing a list, which has now become so extensive that I think I'll probably have to do a separate blog post on it. I've got a long list of books which I think support outdoor adventuring, and you've got some to add as well. What I first wanted to start by saying is that if you've got a child that really loves nature and loves exploring nature, I always think that books are a really good way to support any interest. And the amount of learning that I think my own children have done through reading books around outdoor adventuring has been amazing. And we've also done some really fantastic workshops with the likes of Trace Baller, author, illustrator Trace Baller. And in Brisbane, we have this wonderful thing, which I'm sure there are similar things in other states, called Wildlings Forest School. And now that I have booked my children into all of the Wildling Forest School Christmas activities that I want to, I am now telling everybody else that you may now book. I was not saying until I had booked everything we needed, because at one stage there was two places left in the tree climbing workshop that I wanted to book.
Tree climbing workshop.
Yeah, I am telling you, Wildlings Forest School was like my biggest find of the last 2 years. It has changed my life. It is fantastic. They run nature kindy after school, but they also run these holiday workshops where you literally book your kids in to do things, as the beekeeper said, that he could do but doesn't have time to do. When he first went along to one, he's like, but I could have done that. And I'm like, yeah, but you didn't. So the beekeeper clearly works in nature every single day of his life and could do all of these things, but does he? No. So instead, we book them into Wildlings Forest School. And we've done tree climbing workshops, raft building. We've done whittling workshops, living our best life. We've done fire starting workshops.
I get that. So I understand the whittling. I get that. That's not something that everybody's got the, you know, nows to do.
Yeah.
Get that. Even fire starting, I could be on board with that because, you know, I watch enough. Do you watch Alone on
Occasionally, yes, yes,
Oh,
yes.
we're obsessed with Alone.
Yes.
We are absolutely
Yes.
obsessed with it. If you don't know what I'm talking about, have a look at it on SBS.
Yeah,
It's
pretty
about
good.
10 survivors. You know, at the moment, the one that we're watching, they're in the Arctic Circle and it's winter. And there are wolves. Like, this is actually like serious stuff. But anyway, yeah, so I get that. I get fire starting, whatever. But tree climbing? Don't you
Oh,
just
yeah,
like
but it's.
send them in the direction of a tree and off they
No,
go?
I can't explain. They've got these fantastic educators that know all about the trees and they know what varieties of trees they are and the best. And they just teach skills which a lot of kids don't have. Look, to be fair, our kids are all quite good tree climbers, but they just teach things like different, you know, and they'll build things in the tree and they've always got extras. They've always got crafts that they'll do and it's really
Oh no, it
beautiful.
sounds great. And hashtag not sponsored, by the way. This is just a
No, but wouldn't that be
conversation.
great? God,
Well,
that sounds
have a chat with them.
I'm on board with that now. Anyway, I love it. And my daughter, my 10-year-old daughter's bestie is also an outdoor adventurer in the extreme. And for Chickpea's 10th birthday, she gave her, the mother asked me first, her first pocket knife. So they now both have pocket knives and they love a bit of whittling and they go to Wildlings Forest School together. So, you know. And I will talk about a pocket knife book in a tick. So onto my list, I've got a fantastic list of books which I think support outdoor adventuring. I won't go through the whole list, but I'll highlight some of my favourites and I'll put all of the titles with links to purchase them on the Your Kids Next Read show notes page. The first one is Let's Eat Weeds, written by Annie Racer. It's a new one, Racer Rowland, and it's fantastic. And it's about what sorts of plants in the Australian bush you can actually eat and use for different things.
I
I
saw that
love,
one in my
yes.
Gardening Australia magazine.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, there you go. So it's endorsed
Ah, I.
by Costa.
Oh. Oh, look, I have met Costa. I have done a workshop with Costa. I love Costa.
Oh,
Can
so
I?
do I. Yeah, I'm all over it.
Yeah. George Ivanov, who is a great author, has got quite a few survival books. He's got the Australia Survival Guide, which is a really fantastic hardcover book. And he's also got the Flying Doctor's Adventure series, which I really like. So if you've got a kid who's really into adventure and a bit of saving, but also might be keen to learn a bit more about the Royal Flying Doctor's Service, that's a fantastic series for readers from about 10. I love, love, love The Grand Genius Summer of Henry Hoobler by Lisa Shanahan. It's about getting out into nature, going camping with your family, bike riding, being by the beach. I love that one. Landing with Wings, anything by Trace Bella, actually. She does beautiful graphic novel style. Well, they're not really graphic novels, they're beautiful illustrated texts. They're gorgeous. Searching for Cicadas by Leslie Gibbs and illustrated by Judy Watson is part of the Walker Books Nature Storybook series, which you know I love very much. The National Geographic Camping and Outdoor Family Activity Guide. And then I've got some really great books called The Knot Book and 50 Things to Do with a Pen Knife, which we own at home. So they're practical books teaching skills. The Forest School Activity Cards. I have a set of those at school and a set at home, and I really like those. And then Playing the Forest School Way, which kind of goes along with those activity cards. And if you want something as a parent to read, I would highly recommend The Last Child in the Woods. It's a fantastic book by Richard Louv, and it's all about getting back into nature. So that's sort of my general list of books which I would recommend that you have at home or access to in your school or public library, encouraging outdoor adventuring. And I think that you've got a few more, Al.
I do. And it's interesting because I had a conversation for, well, an interview with Inga Simpson recently for the So You Want to Be a Writer podcast. She has a new adult novel out called The Last Woman in the World. But she also earlier this year brought out a new, her very first book for children, and it's all about trees. It's called The Book of Australian Trees. The theme of trees, if you've ever read her work, she has been shortlisted for, you know, all the prizes. Like she's a wonderful, wonderful writer. She writes a lot about trees. Like trees feature in pretty much all of her novels in one way or another. And so she's kind of taken that interest and turned it into this non-fiction book of Australian trees. There are 15 varieties which are illustrated by Alicia Rogerson. And then of course Inga's lyrical text. And we had a conversation on the podcast about how she you know, how do you decide which 15 trees you're going to include in your book, and then, you know, what to say about them and how to make it interesting for kids. And it was a great conversation, and it made me, you know, order the book, because I'm keen to have an actual look at it. I don't have it personally, and I'm going to talk about it in book mail once that arrives, because I'm loving the idea of it. And I think anything, see, the thing with outdoor books is quite interesting. You can either use them to support a kid's interest already, or you can give them to a child to encourage getting out there. So this is the kind of book where, you know, most of us are going to have at least one of these types of trees, if not several, around us somewhere, you know, your backyard, up the road, at the park. And I just think it's a great way to encourage kids to go looking for them. Like, we have down towards the beach here, we have the scribbly gums, which I love. I am obsessed with them. They look like someone's drawn all over the trunks. They are absolutely stunning. Beautiful. And I remember when the boys were a bit younger, taking them out there specifically to say, look how amazing this is. And so I think that anything that encourages that kind of thing, because, you know, I'm laughing at your tree climbing workshops, but the reality is that we've lost our taste for risk, and we've certainly lost our taste for risk with our children. And so, you know, the idea of having to have a tree climbing workshop, it actually makes a lot of sense, because a lot of parents don't want their kids climbing trees in case they fall out. And so we discourage it, and so they don't know how to do it. And so, you know, that's sort of like a basic, you know, skill that is lost. I remember when we first moved down to the south coast out of Sydney, we lived in a house that had a quite large tree in the backyard, and book boy, you know, was in kindy, and we invited a friend over, you know, the first sort of friend that he had made came over, and her older sister came with her, and the older sister was probably, I don't know, 8 years old maybe, and she walked, it was fascinating. She walked through the house and was up the tree before anyone had even had time to say hello. And I was just like, what? it was really, really interesting, because she just, and I said, oh, is she going to be all right up there? And the mum just went, yeah, she'll be fine.
Yeah. Or in the case of my children, she might fall out and break an arm. As you know, we've had a lot of broken arms in my family. But, you know, it's okay. We get back up in the tree with a cast on. It's fine.
It's totally fine. I love it. The other book that I wanted to mention that I discovered, because I was searching for things to spend creative kids vouchers on, and I wanted to do some sort of art things for my younger son, and I came across a website where now I've lost track of it and I don't remember what it was called anymore. Megan, help me.
Wildkindy.com.
That's right. At wildkindy.com.au, there is a product called Your Wild Journal, and it's created by Brooke Davis, and it is beautiful. It is the kind of thing that if you give it to a kid and encourage them outside with it, you know, there are illustrations in it, you know, draw a bee, and they show you how to draw a bee. But mostly it's just about getting outside, writing down what you see. There's an overview included on how to use the journal. There's moon, sunrise and sunset tracking pages. There's writing prompts, open-ended writing prompts. And it's just a way to kind of encourage mindfulness, you know, sitting in your backyard. Like, I think it's a lovely thing, and it's just the most gorgeous looking book. It would be any kid would be absolutely thrilled to get it, I think, as a gift. So it's at wildkindy.com.au, and it's called Your Wild Journal. And then the last one I want to talk about is one that's not out just yet. It's coming up in, I'm pretty sure it's February, through Hardy Grant. It is written and illustrated by a dear friend of mine called Melissa Milchreest, M-Y-L-C-H-R-E-E-S-T. It's called Rewilding Kids Australia, and it is a mindful activity book. It's all about nature-based activities, colouring opportunities. It's aimed at kids aged 7 to 12, And it's a lovely, lovely book. And it's a national kind of thing. So there's, you know, green turtles on the Great Barrier Reef, lyrebirds in the Blue Mountains, just a whole lot of things that will teach your kid a little bit about the different sort of natural environments in different parts of Australia, encourage nature-based activities. And it's gorgeous. She's a gorgeous person and it's a gorgeous book. So have a look for that one coming out in February through Hardy Grant.
Sounds great.
Very, very good. All right, so let's move on. What else have I got? Oh, no, wait, one last one that we nearly forgot to mention in the Outdoor Kids one is Twitch by MG Leonard, all about a bird watcher. It's a middle grade book, and I love anything that encourages bird watching, and it's a stunner. It's a great book.
Absolutely loved that one.
Yeah, so we'll put that on in the show notes as well. All right, Megan, what have you got for our quick tips this week?
My quick tip is very, very quick. I did a nature journaling workshop with Trace Baller, who I spoke about earlier, many years ago at the Story Arts Festival, and I was meant to be supervising it, and I ended up joining in with the kids because I so enjoyed it, and I ignored the children and just focused on Trace Baller. I learned so much about journaling in nature with very young children right up to teens, and I'm going to link to two YouTube clips that she did for, I think, the Royal Botanic Gardens, on nature journaling. They're about 10 minutes each, and it takes you through the process of making your own nature journal. And I am, for Christmas, gifting all of the cousins a little notebook, handmade nature journal, and an aqua pen, which is a really fun, it's like a watercolor brush that you fill with water. Trace Baller uses them a lot. A tiny little watercolor palette and some pencils and so forth. I'm setting up a little kit like Trace Baller has done in these YouTube clips. So that's my quick tip, bit of nature journaling with Trace Baller.
Fantastic. All right. Now I'm actually going to switch gears a little bit. We're not going to talk outdoorsy with my quick tips because, you know, let's face it, how outdoorsy am I really apart from walking the dog? I want to talk about the fact that I'm seeing all over the internet at the moment a lot of authors talking about the fact that their book week visits are open for 2022. Now I know that we are in November 2021, and I know that most, I know that we have a lot of, you know, teachers and teacher librarians who listen in to us each week, and I know that you are not thinking about next August.
Yes.
I get that.
Yes, we are.
Oh, you are. Okay.
I've already booked all of mine.
Oh, there you go. Well, you're very organized, right? So all I want to say is that they're booking now, they're open now, they're booking now, and you need to get in early if you want to, particularly if there's, you know, someone in particular that you want to have at your school. So I thought I would ask you, Megan, from the other side of the fence, because I've just decided that, you know, I'm going to make you do all the work this week. How do you choose your authors for your school visits? Like, what are you looking for?
Well, first of all,
and why aren't you having me? Come on.
Because I'm in a prep to year three library, and I'm not sure until your picture book comes out that you're entirely suitable.
Oh, I got to get onto the picture book. That's right. Sorry. Yes. Okay.
Do that picture book, and then I will book you, my friend.
So there you go. There's your first tip. Know your audience, right?
Exactly. That's right. So I always make sure that my author visits are very aligned with the curriculum. I do not like the token book week visit. They create a lot of excitement and they're great. But for me, I want them really connected to whatever my young people are studying at school so that the teachers are really invested in the visit and that there'll be lots of pre-work and follow-up work. For me, that's best value and best use of authors. So for next year, I have already booked Yvonne Mess, and she's going to do a few day workshop with my year ones who are looking at narrative story writing, and she's going to take them through from go to woe. Lucky Yvonne, she will be exhausted. And I've booked a few more people throughout the year. I tend to have one or two a term for different year levels. I like to make sure, first of all, I obviously look at the books and if the books fit somewhere in the curriculum. We have Sam Wheeler every year in year four because our year fours study Sam Wheeler's nature books. And next year we're also having Sammy Bailey, which I'm terribly excited about.
That is exciting. Can I come? I just want to watch her do her illustrations.
So excited. So I always look at the book, but then I also try and find either a bit of information about them on social media or a YouTube clip of them presenting, because not every author is made to present to small children. It's a real skill. And let's face it, writing and illustrating are very solitary professions. And a lot of you guys aren't necessarily extroverts that want to stand in front of an audience of small children rolling around on the floor ignoring you, and you have to captivate them. So, you know, I always like to check that the author is someone that genuinely wants to be there and is a commanding presenter, you know, has a bit of interest, something interesting they can share with the students. Because I don't think it's fair on the author or illustrator either if they're a bit shy and not going to cope very well with small children rolling around on the floor. So that's, I guess, my quick tips. But I do have a section in my book, Raising Readers, all about how to host an author visit. And I feel really strongly about them being done properly from the school end. So making sure that you look after your author or illustrator very well. So I've got quite an extensive section in my book on how to run a successful author visit.
And I also have on my website, and I'll put the link in the show notes as well, tips for authors doing author visits, so from the other side of the fence. So we'll just put those together, and that way, you know, we'll be covering off, you know, anyone who might be listening. And it's, I just wanted to flag that, you know, if there's someone that you've got in mind that you're really keen for, it's always a good idea to get in early and make sure that you secure the person that you want. All right. So what are we doing this week, Megan? Tell me all about it.
Well, this is a friendly message from your over-enthusiastic beekeeping teacher librarian that Australian Pollination Week, or Australian Pollinator Week, I should say, is nearly upon us.
What? Is that a thing?
It is a thing. Of course it's a thing.
Who knew?
So when this podcast is released, it will be Pollinator Week. It is the 13th to the 21st of November 2021, and you can get involved with having a pollinator picnic, doing a pollinator count with young people at your school, or doing one at home. And there's lots of fun activities on some of the on the various websites around Australian Pollinator Week. So I would encourage you to get on board. I have hosted some really lovely pollinator picnics over the years. Don't laugh at me, Al Tate.
Look, honestly, how could I laugh at such a thing? How could I laugh at such an important thing? There's no way that I would do that. I'm not hosting pollinator picnics. Maybe I should be. Maybe I better hastily organise one immediately. I'm actually not doing an awful lot of anything, which I'm not unhappy about. I'm not having to go anywhere. I'm not having to do much. I'm just supporting the maths exam for the HSC and, you know, just doing a whole bunch of stuff, hopefully wrangling this picture book idea into something that's useful so that I get to be on the 2023 author. Oh, no, it'll take longer than that. Maybe about 2025 I can be on the on the book week program at your school. And that's about it. So I guess where will we find you in the meantime? Are you just hanging out at childrensbooksdaily.com?
I will be hanging out probably on Instagram, uploading exciting photos of Pollinator Week.
That's very, very exciting. You'll find me at alisontate.com, and I will probably be hanging out on Instagram posting photos of my dog, because that's pretty much what I do. My dog. All right. Well, we'll see you next time.
See you.